thank you for tuning in. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. I was on a website for a state park the other day, and they promoted the fact that Wi-Fi was available. And who hasn't cursed when a driver makes a bonehead move? And of course, there's a cell phone in use. Ever had a grocery checkout lane operated by someone who was blind texting, the cell phone in their smock pocket? Today we discuss some of the downsides of our preoccupation with technology. It's a real factor in the workplace, with cyber loafing costing billions of dollars. I'm joined now by Dr. Joanne Cantor, Professor Emerita at the University of Wisconsin. She's an expert on the psychology of media and communications. She's the author of Conquer Cyber Overload, Get More Done, Boost Your Creativity, and Reduce Stress. She joins us from Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Dr. Cantor.
Hello.
You say you're a recovering cyber addict. Symptoms?
Well, the symptoms were that I was constantly going on news websites when I was trying to get something done. And I was interrupting myself all the time, and I was also finding that my memory was starting to go. I couldn't hold things in my mind the way I used to. And at that point, I decided that I would switch my research focus from the effects of the media on children to the effects of our new gadgets on adults. And one thing I discovered was that when I myself cut back, I became more productive, and I also got my memory back.
So what's the link between memory and overuse of today's technology?
Well, one of the problems with our new technologies is that we're connected to an infinite amount of information. And what we end up with is information overload. And information overload doesn't permit us to store our memories well. So having too much information really blocks our ability to think and concentrate and get things done and remember things. And it also, it turns out, blocks our ability to be creative.
What's the link to creativity?
Well, with creativity, what you need to do to be creative is to take that next logical step, take a leap from what you know and make something new. And often that is finding a new link between two things that people already know. And one of the problems with too much information is that more and more information keeps coming in, but the ability to make those connections in your brain and make a new leap is interfered with. So one of the important things to learn about creativity is that you need to get a lot of information, but then you have to break away from it in order to let your brain consolidate and marinate all that information. And that's when new insights usually occur.
So why do we become so addicted to this? Why do we have to have that constant texting and emails and that business?
Well, all of the new information that I talk about in Conquer Cyber Overload has to do with how the brain functions. And our brains did not evolve during a time when we had constant input from all sorts of technology. And our brains are designed so that our attention is grabbed very easily by something novel. And so every time something new comes in, we want to pay attention to it. And it's hard for us to maintain our concentration when that's happening. And it's also true that we're a very curious species, and we want to keep abreast of everything that's coming in. So our gadgets, we've always had problems. Many people have had problems with concentration. But with our gadgets bringing everything at us at once, and pinging us and showing us icons popping up, oh, there's something new, oh, there's something new, it makes it harder for us to concentrate on anything and make that next step, either just get something done or be creative.
So it's the constant access to this limited information that appeals to us because of the way our brain has evolved.
That's right, and we're this unlimited information. We become used to getting that unlimited information, and we also become very impatient. We, you know, in the old days, we had to wait until the 6 o'clock news to find out what happened that day, or we had to wait till the newspaper came. Now we know that we can find out the latest on everything at the click of our mouse, and we don't want to wait. So we may be working away at something that we need to get done, but we know that our team just played or the election results are in, and we don't want to wait. We don't want to even finish that sentence. We want to just jump there. And every time we jump back and forth between tasks, we lose a tremendous amount of information, and also the quality of what we do is diminished.
We're speaking with Professor Joanne Cantor of the University of Wisconsin. If you'd like to join in, that's 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, and also email is open. That's radio@WLRN.org. Perhaps you'd like to call in with your digital addictions and how you put the brakes on going too far, and maybe how you keep your kids from abusing the video games and even television. Again, 1-800-743-9576. So let's get into the business side of things, Joanne Cantor, about the cyber loafing. I think almost everyone does it, if they can.
Well, cyber loafing is a large problem. It's been estimated that the cost to American businesses is $650 billion a year from what they call unnecessary interruptions. Now, it could be cyber loafing. It could be people who are not motivated who just say, I'd rather watch the latest sports scores than do my work. But it also can be, I think it's equally a problem with people who are motivated to get things done. But all of this wonderful array of limitless information that comes to us right on our computer is so tantalizing that we can't help ourselves wandering off into other areas. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to help people organize their computer and organize their workday so that they can both get the information they want and need, but also can find some time where they can focus, not just limit themselves from seeking the news. But the other problem with getting things done is that our gadgets make us constantly accessible to everybody. So all our friends, all our coworkers, and all sorts of people who are trying to sell us something have access to us, and when we're working, if we don't set our computers up in a way that protects us, we see these new communications coming in, and we're curious, and we want to see them. So the system is set up to distract us, and so I like to give people just some hints on how to get rid of some of those distractions, at least for certain times of the day, so that they can get things done, so that they have time to think, and they can still benefit from learning all this information.
I know at my desk, if I have some writing that's very important that I need to focus on, I have to shut the email off, because that little boink, and then even seeing the preview window, and I know it's nothing I really need to look at, I still find myself stopping my writing and opening up the email and looking at it.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things I recommend, because a lot of people just don't have the discipline to turn that off, because they think, well, maybe it'll be somebody important, or maybe it'll be something I absolutely have to answer. And then the question is, do you really want to get this thing done that you have to write, and do you want to write it well, and can you bear to maybe turn that off for a half an hour or an hour, and then come back and look at your email all at once? I think if they try it, they'll find that it really works so much better, and they save time too, because a lot of that email that comes in is spam and you can identify it right away. And rather than going back and forth and back and forth every sentence you're writing, if you can get rid of all that spam in one fell swoop, you're going to do much better.
We're speaking with Dr. Joanne Cantor of the University of Wisconsin, and we're talking about her book, Conquer Cyber Overload, Get More Done, Boost Your Creativity, and Reduce Stress. She's an expert on the psychology of media and communications. Dr. Cantor, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. If you have questions about our station, 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys, please call this toll-free number, 1-866-740-9596. That's 1-866-740-WKWM. And we're glad to have you listening. The Coral Gables Congregational Church Community Arts Program Summer Concert Series continues 8 p.m. Thursday, June 17th with cellist Mark Kosauer, newly appointed principal cello of the Cleveland Orchestra, and pianist G10 performing music of Debussy, Beethoven, and Rachmaninoff. The series also brings Ann Hampton Calloway, pianist, Owadajan Pratt, Nicholas Payton, and Ramsey Lewis. Tickets and info at 305-448-7421 and online at communityartsprogram.org.
I was working online, I was talking on Bluetooth, downloading songs, checking email and YouTube, texting my friends, I twittered 20 new tweets, and that's when my brain began to overheat. My Black Mary's high-def digital camera wouldn't sync up with my printer fax scanner. Tech support calls started yakking away, lost in translation all the way from Bombay. I had to break out of this techno mood. I needed something primal like a big hunk of food. But for a nano moment, I forgot where it is. So I Googled directions from my den to my fridge. I was so fried, I wondered how much bandwidth it would take for my iPod to download a sandwich. Deep in my hard drive, a feeling took root. My brain just might crash if I didn't reboot.
There, you get the idea. That little ditty is called Analog Brain in a Digital World by Greg Tamblyn. How'd you like that, Dr. Cantor?
I think it's great, and one of the things it brings up is multitasking, and multitasking is rampant. Everybody seems to be multitasking now because it's so easy. You've got the ability with one device to have many things open at the same time, and the research on multitasking, which has been done just in the past few years, is devastating. People think they can multitask, but in fact, when you think you're doing two things at once, in fact, your brain can't do that. Your brain is switching back and forth between two things. And in fact, research shows that if you take two things and do them at the same time and compare that to doing them one after the other, doing them at the same time takes much longer and the quality is inferior. So you're actually, some people say, I have to multitask because I have so many things to do. But actually, they're really handicapping themselves.
As far as multitasking, is there a difference in digital natives versus digital immigrants?
Well, some people think it's true, but there's actually, the research shows that no matter what your age, the digital natives are the ones that grew up already with a cell phone in their hand and a computer. They also lose when they multitask. Now, there's one reason why they might not lose quite as much as older people do, and that is because one thing that's involved in multitask is called working memory. It's the ability to hold small bits of information in your mind for a short period of time. the ability to do that peaks at the age of 25. So younger people don't lose as much as people in their 60s when they multitask, but they still lose a lot. And it's as if they're, when you're multitasking, it's as if you're using your left hand if you're right-handed. Of course, you can do it, and you can practice, but you're never going to get as good with your left hand as you will with your right hand. And the other really interesting research is that when you, let's say you learn something while you're multitasking, let's say you're reading something while you're also watching television, what you learn while multitasking is at a much lower level. You may, it's sort of like rote memory. You may remember the words that you read, but you don't get the big picture. You can't generalize it to new information. So basically what you're doing, when, even if you're young, when you're multitasking, is you're powering down your brain. You're using your brain at a lower level. It's almost like, one example is, okay, you're using dial-up rather than broadband. So you're handicapping yourself in a way that doesn't help you at all.
Let's take a quick call. I've got Ed in Miami. Hey, Ed.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I was just commenting with respect to what Dr. Kent was saying. Is it a generational thing with, like you said, the native, digital natives who are born with computers? First thing that they see and they touch is computers nowadays. I can see it in my kids, where they're actually so efficient when it comes to working on their, they become multitaskers from a very early age. Wouldn't that make them a better individual, per se, as they grow older?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, and a lot of people think that's true, but there was some really interesting research out of Stanford last summer, which tried to show that people who multitask a lot are good at it, that they get better and better. So they compared people who multitask a lot to people who hardly ever multitask, and these were college students, so they're probably digital natives. And they gave them three tasks that involved multitasking. And surprisingly, the heavy multitaskers did worse on all three tasks than the infrequent multitaskers. So there's not much evidence that people get better at it. They adapt to it in a way, but they don't necessarily do it well. And I think the reason people do it is not that they're more effective at it, but that they're bored and they don't really want to concentrate on one thing at a time because they've become habituated to having a lot of things happening at once. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of things that you do require concentration and attention and deep thought, and doing multiple things doesn't work. Now, of course, you can multitask certain things that aren't important. Let's say you want to watch television and fold the laundry or something like that. You won't fold the laundry as fast while you're watching television, but maybe it doesn't matter because, you know, the quality of folding your laundry isn't really going to make a big difference in your life. But certainly if you want to do two things that involve words, and if you want to, you know, be creative or writing something while doing anything else is really going to cut down on your ability to do it fast and also the quality of what you do.
And another caller, I've got Don in Miami. Thanks for your patience, Don. Hi.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good.
I actually had a question for the doctor, and I wonder if she can explain if there's been any research into why people are sometimes unable to stop. For example, texting while driving. I own a business, and I find that it's very hard to not respond to that text message or respond to that email that may have come in from a customer. And I find myself, I don't want to be one of those people who try and drive and do it, but I find myself pulling over all the time to answer an email or respond to a text message. And you know, it's hard to just not put down the phone.
How about turning it off?
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, that's, you make a very good point. And one of the reasons I wrote a book rather than just made a list of things to do is that it's not that easy. You really have to understand what's behind it. You have to understand how your brain works to understand what you're up against. And also, the research isn't enough. I also include brain exercises, so you can try little things that I suggest, and you can feel from the inside what's wrong with what you're trying to do. But at any rate, there is... I looked on one of these databases for psychological research recently, and I noticed that there were 172 articles, research articles, about Internet addiction, okay? So there is there's an argument about whether we should call it an actual addiction, but people have trouble giving up the habits that they've developed with technology, partially because it does key into the way our brains work. Our brains want to check out everything that comes in as soon as it comes in. I guess I would say, you know, in the case of a business, I can understand why a business person wants to respond to a customer right away, because people want their businesses to do that, and it's a really good thing that you pull over to answer the text, because we know there's so many tragedies involved in people who actually try to text while they drive, which is really putting such a strain on your brain's capacity and leaving you in grave danger. What I say in Conquer Cyber Overload is to make a decision in advance what kinds of messages you absolutely have to respond to immediately. And hopefully those are the limited things. I call these drop everything contacts. For many people, they would like to turn off their cell phones or turn off their email for an hour while they work, but they've got a sick mother and they wonder how the mother will get through. So if you could make a list of your drop everything contacts and find a way for those emergencies to get through to you, then you can feel comfortable leaving the phone off for a little period of time. But your question about customers, I mean, it would seem to me that if you're on the road a lot, maybe a good idea would be to have to set it up so that calls or texts go to somebody else when you're on the road, those that really have to be answered, so that you don't feel that you have to put your life in danger in order to meet your customer's needs.
Our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, and also email, that's radio@WLRN.org. We're speaking with Dr. Joanne Cantor of the University of Wisconsin. Let's move along to Chloe in Miami Beach. Hi there.
Yes, hello, Dr. Cantor. You mentioned the effect on creativity, and I was struck listening to WLRN, the NPR station here this morning. There was an interview with a young woman who will be honored tomorrow at Carnegie Hall, and she writes exceptional poetry. She's Mexican-American, and she has an amazing talent of observation of people in the cities and in subways. And I'm someone, when I travel, I just, you know, devour everything I'm looking at visually, the architecture, the fashion. And I wonder if a generation that is just constantly with eyes on tiny screens is going to be as urbane and as have the same observation. And then I had a really quick question is, do you think it's almost an act of rebellion or abnormality not to want to be on Facebook? I mean, it's almost like being nonconformist not to get on Facebook.
Yes, very good questions. The creativity issue is fascinating, and I do believe that if we keep our eyes on the screen always, we miss so much of the rest of the world. And one of the things we need to do to young people, and one of the groups I really want to reach out to is, say, college freshmen who are being bombarded with their gadgets, but they're still supposed to be paying attention in class, and that doesn't happen very often. But at any rate, I used to be the kind of person that if I had to go to a doctor appointment and I knew I was going to have to wait for like 2 minutes, I would bring a book to read or a crossword puzzle to do, because I couldn't stand to just sit around and look around at the people in the audience. And there are people, obviously, who take walks, and they can't take walks without some input coming into their ears. Mm. And I've discovered since I've pulled back on all of this that I can find really interesting things all around me the way you do and the way that poet did, because there's a lot of things out there that we can experience firsthand that are going to be so much more powerful than what we get through our screens. And we also tend to go back to the same screens over and over again, so we limit the breadth of what we're exposed to. So I think you make a very good point. And as for Facebook, too, I'm struggling with Facebook myself, because as an author, they tell you have to have a Facebook presence. You have to have a web platform. But at the same time, Facebook can be extremely time-consuming, not to mention Twitter, which is just the next step up. So you want to be able to communicate with people who are interested in what you have to say, but at the same time, you can get swallowed up in it so that you don't have any time for creativity and thought, et cetera. And I can talk about this later. It's not directly related to this caller's question, but the recent research on what happens in the brain during creativity is really fascinating.
I know we're mostly devoted to the psychological aspects of this, but let me read you this email I received today. A new survey has found that social networking site Facebook is being cited in most divorce cases as the main provider of evidence of spouses cheating. The survey was conducted on some of the nation's top divorce lawyers. They revealed that their clients come to court armed with evidence they got from the website, and it's not always the betrayed spouse who stumbles across the internet evidence. Often it's friends, neighbors, and sometimes children who bust their parents. That's an odd development with
Facebook.
Well,
it's interesting that we have, within a generation, given over the most private aspects of our lives to the net. You know, we used to just whisper our secrets to our best friends, but many times we're now broadcasting our secrets. That's really interesting. And from another perspective, what we seem to be finding is that even though, you know, the net is a double-edged sword when it comes to interpersonal relationships, because we can keep in touch better with people that are far away. So we can Skype with our grandchildren across the country and have a much closer relationship that way than we would if we were just limited to phone calls once a week. But on the other hand, many people are on their gadgets when they're in the room with people that they should be interacting with. So in many cases, family dinners end up as people sitting around the table and each one is looking at a screen, and that really interferes with interpersonal contact, which is so important. And so, I mean, I think these gadgets are great because they do provide us with wonderful information that is used to be so much harder to get. But at the same time, if we don't manage them, these gadgets, well, we can end up losing our ability for face-to-face contact, or at least losing the time that we need to nurture our face-to-face contacts.
And let's move along. Satara, is that correct? In Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you for this very interesting topic. Dr. Cantor, I have a question with regard to adult learning and training. I'm 37 years old, and I'm experiencing all of the different symptoms that you mentioned with regard to losing memory and just feeling like I'm bombarded with information all the time, and I'm in a very highly technical field. So I'm wondering what your opinion is about use of this technology and the different gadgets as part of adult training. There seems to be a trend toward increased use of this technology, and I'm just maybe a little concerned, particularly based on this conversation.
Well, thank you. I think that it depends on how you use the technology, and also some people work better, learn better face-to-face, and some can benefit more from technology. I take a lot of webinars to get information, say, about how to get your information out on the web, for example. And one of the problems with a lot of webinars is that you can't interrupt and ask questions. You may be able to ask questions at the end, but one of the great things about the college classroom is that students can raise their hand and ask a question, and that question can be tailored to the student's needs. So in some cases, you can learn a lot through technology, but in other cases, you really need more of an interpersonal connection. I also think you bring up a good point about the workplace, and the workplace now is designed to maximize technological communications, but in doing so, it often minimizes the ability to let workers really concentrate and get things done. So I think that information about these problems needs to be given not just to people who are working, but to managers. Many managers want their employees to be sitting there at their computer and ready to answer in a minute's time any email that they should send them. And what this does is force the workers to be multitasking and working at a lower level, and never so that the managers have to be convinced that that they're not getting the top quality brain power that they hired if they're setting up the workplace so that everybody is constantly answering each other. And there have been a few companies that have done pilot programs. Intel did I describe a pilot program at Intel in my book that that involved quiet Tuesdays. And so Tuesday mornings for several hours, they encouraged everybody to turn off all of their communication equipment and to leave each other alone as much as possible. And the result was that people reported getting so much more done, feeling better about the quality of their work after that, and recommending that it be expanded to more days and to more employees.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Joanne Cantor, speaking of task switching, why is it that even if we're driving in a car with hands-free cell phone, I always feel much more distracted than if somebody's sitting next to me and we're having a conversation?
That's a very interesting question, and I wondered about that too. And I think it's because, well, there are two reasons. One is when you're talking to somebody who's also in the car, they're also responding to the situation that you're seeing.
So if you're making a tough left turn, they shut
up. That's right. They shut up. And also, so that's one thing. And if something happens all of a sudden, they're there with you. And so the person you're talking to on the cell phone doesn't have that. But also, I think it's true that when you're talking to somebody on the cell phone, part of your brain is being used to imagine that person visualize that person. And I think you're spending more time or more brain power when you talk on the cell phone devoted to that conversation than when that person is right next to you.
Okay, let's move along. I've got Ron in Aventura. Hey there. Ron, you're up.
Yes, hello. Doctor?
Hello.
Hello. Yes,
hello.
I have a question, please. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. I had an aha moment while I was listening to you a while ago, because when you mentioned that multitasking confuses the brain, or I guess another word, it becomes impatient and has to have, it gets to be habit forming and impatient for new information to come to it all the time. Can that be related, or has it been related at all, to students that have ADHD, because their brain is looking for something else when the teacher's trying to talk about something that was to them like 100 years ago, meaning 5 minutes?
Yes, well, I've heard speculation about that. I haven't actually seen research on that.
No.
But it is, many people think that we're all becoming a little ADHD-ish.
Yes.
Because we used to be able to sit and listen to one person talk to us,
right,
and wait through even pauses. Mm-hmm. Now what's happening, you may notice that people are talking to each other on the phone, and if the person pauses, takes a breath, often the people are checking their email in the in between. So we've lost that ability. And the ability to wait through that pause, I mean, that pause might be important for us to ponder what they're thinking and what it means for us.
Yes,
but
he's doing it to you.
Yeah. I've noticed when I participate in a family Friday night dinner where there's grandchildren around and the children, et cetera, families, part of the children there are looking below the table and emailing and doing stuff while they're sitting there.
Right.
And it's hard to get anybody's attention about looking you in the eye and answering something, because they're always doing 100 other things. And I might say that two of those grandchildren have been to psychiatrists, and they take pills for their ADHD and things like that. And I thought, you know, not that you can say, okay, that's the end of the cell of these digital things, that's what's doing it, even if it were, but I think the American Psychiatric or whoever it is, there must be research maybe about it, but I think it's another tool for a parent to use to show them why what they're doing is going to, in the long run, hurt their chances about getting ahead in life.
Well, I agree with you, and that's why I think you, and I don't think you can forbidding it is really not going to be as effective as trying to get them to understand what's going on in their brain and why they think they're not missing anything. And if you can show them with these brain exercises how much they're missing, then maybe you can get them to cooperate with the idea, okay, well, we're going to have 15 minutes of just us and none of our connections, and we're going to see something that we haven't seen before. It's true. I mean, this problem is true in college classrooms, too, because professors want to ban texting in class, but it's very hard to do because students do it under the table. And the only way, I think, to get them to really cooperate is to show them how much they're missing. In fact, some research, well, certainly if you are surfing the Internet during class, you're not getting as much. In fact, one study I saw showed that students who were surfing the Internet in class did no better on the test than people who didn't come to the class at all, because your mind is really focused on something else. This reminds me of a time when I started teaching way back in the 1970s. There was a student in my class who used to fall asleep after just a few minutes and sleep through the class. And people used to say to me, you know, how can you put up with this? And my first reaction was, well, at least he showed up for the class. But now there's this really interesting research about sleep, and how during your sleep, your brain is actually consolidating and interpreting what you have learned just before you went to sleep. So I'm thinking that that kid who was sleeping during my class was probably getting more information out of the class than people who are now texting and web surfing during class. So I think it's a matter of having kids really learn what the effects are, because they don't necessarily understand what the effects are, and they're really quite dramatic. The other thing I wanted to bring up is that it's stressful to be constantly bombarded by all sorts of information, and pulling back from that just for a little period of time to take a walk, get some sleep, interact with nature can really help you both reduce your stress, and often really good ideas come to you while you're doing these things and not continuing to cram new information into your brain.
Dr. Joanne Cantor, her book is Conquer Cyber Overload. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us for Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. City Year Miami unites a diverse group of 17 to 24-year-olds for a year of service as tutors, mentors, and role models who make a difference to students and schools. You can learn more online at cityyear.org. City Year, give a year, change the world. A look ahead to tomorrow's program.
Hello, it's Joseph Cooper. Tune in tomorrow for our Restaurant Roundabout with producer Linda Gastenheimer, Miami Herald wine columnist Fred Tasker, restaurant critic Jen Koretnik, and Broward reviewer Rochelle Koff. We'll discuss the regional restaurant scene, the openings, closings, chef changes, and such, and, of course, take your calls about your favorite or least favorite places. So join us Thursday at 1 o'clock for the Restaurant Roundabout. And we return. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you, 49 minutes past 1 o'clock. My guest is Dr. Joanne Cantor. She's a professor at the University of Wisconsin. We're talking about her book, Conquer Cyber Overload. Let's go back to the phones. I've got Linda in Deerfield Beach. Hey there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Being an ex-driving safety instructor, we saw some very extremely hard to watch videos of people who were talking and texting that got killed, and yet there's no politicians or anyone that's willing to put something on the books as far as how dangerous it is to be texting and driving or talking, period.
Well, there are laws. It's just so difficult to enforce, I think.
Not anything really official. I mean, they can't pull you over because you're on the phone and you're driving. Almost everybody that you see is driving and talking. I mean, they don't have the capability of doing that.
I know there is a law about texting.
Not just talking on the phone. Usually you'll see somebody backing out when they're backing into traffic and they're talking on the phone.
Yeah, well, you know, Oprah has taken this on as her latest mission to get people to not talk on their phones while they're driving. It's you know, politicians, I suppose, think that they're just following the whim of the people. But, you know, it is so, people have become so used to making use of every minute of their time. So if they're in the car, they want to be, driving it is not enough. And they think that they can do much more than they really can. So one of my missions in this is just to try to get people to understand how their brain works so that they can understand why they can't do this. A lot of people think, well, if I really concentrate and I really try hard, I'll be able to do it. But that isn't necessarily show, as I explained earlier about the research. You know, and what I started on this not by writing a book, but by giving seminars and speeches about this topic. And I found the audiences so receptive. And then I found that there was so much research I turned it into a book. But some people say to me, why did you write a book for people who are basically addicted to their gadgets, because they're not going to be reading books? So and I did it. I did several things, and one is I made the book really short, because I know people who have this problem feel they're so busy they don't want to put their gadget down for any length of time. I made it short, but I also included lists of things that people can do. Strategies. This is what you can do with your computer. This is what you can do with your communications. Here are some things to boost your creativity. Here are some things to reduce stress, because a lot of people don't want to sit down and read a book from cover to cover, even though the book is meant to be a good read from cover to cover. Some people just want to jump to the conclusions and the strategies, and so I include them too. But I do think that the explanations and the research and the anecdotes are important for really convincing people that they need to understand their brain, and they need to and they can do much better if they do less things at a time. And so one of the overarching messages of my book is that you can do more if you do less. Or you can say, workaholism doesn't work. Or you can't get the big picture if you keep your nose to the grindstone. So a lot of my book is really working against this notion that we have to be working 24/7, even though we're also playing 24/7. So we're multitasking. We're always attached to our computer to see if anything is needed in the office. But at the same time, we're also watching television. You're much better off giving yourself really healthy breathers between your stints of work, and then concentrating and focusing on your work for the period of time that you need to do it.
Dr. Joanne Cantor, how about a website where people can learn more about you?
Yes.
And
my website is called cyberoverload.com. And I've also been blogging on psychologytoday.com. And so a lot of the things that I'm talking about, I'm expanding upon on that blog.
How do people go about trying to limit their use of surfing the web? I know I find it difficult researching programs. I'll see a link to something that catches my eye, and boom, I'm off to it. And
I've
lost that time. How do I limit myself?
Yes. Well, the first thing that I say is to try a little bit at a time, okay? Because I'm not asking you to change your entire day starting tomorrow, because you're not going to be able to do it. But try, let's say you're researching your next program. Say to yourself, I am going to only go to the links that are relevant. And if I see something that looks fun or interesting or for some other project, I'm just going to bookmark it and go back to what I'm doing. And then you'll find that you've really gotten so much done that you're going to benefit from having done that and feel comfortable doing that again because you've had that little success. And I also, one thing that I have done for my computer, I used to have my default browser as a very active news site. So every time I'd be writing a paper and say, oh, yes, I've got to look up such and such, and I would go, and just opening Safari had all this wonderful information in there that I just had to follow. Right. And then half an hour later, I said, now what was it I came to the Internet for? So I changed it. Now my default browser is my own website, just because, not because I'm narcissistic, but because I know what's on my own website, and it doesn't make me curious.
Dr. Cantor, we're about out of time, but I certainly want to thank you. It's been a pleasure for you spending this hour with us. Joanne Cantor is a professor emerita at the University of Wisconsin, and her book is called Conquer Cyber Overload, Get More Done, Boost Your Creativity, and Reduce Stress. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that wraps up today's program. It was produced by Richard Ives, technical supervision by Bonnie Berman. Also a thank you to Michael Stock. My apologies to those callers. I couldn't get on the air. comments, questions, or suggestions, go to rives@wlrn.org. And if you want a friend to hear it, audio archives are found at wlrn.org. Tomorrow at this time, it's our popular restaurant roundabout with Linda Gassenheimer. Got a nice cafe or bistro you want to crow about? How about a great blue plate diner or pizza joint? Barbecue. Calendar time. On this day in 1893, 147 years ago, the birth of composer and lyricist Cole Porter in Peru, Indiana. Kiss Me Kate, Anything Goes, I Get a Kick Out of You. Also, on this day in 1930, 70 years ago, the birth of comedian Jackie Mason in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. He was ordained a rabbi but quit for showbiz. He allegedly flipped Ed Sullivan the bird on live network TV. And one more while we ponder the torrid affair of Burton and Taylor. On this day in 1963, 47 years ago, the epic movie Cleopatra opens in New York. Originally 6 hours long, it was cut to 3 hours over the objections of director Joseph Mankiewicz. Our theme music created by Michael Levine. And we leave with a thought from Jackie Mason, who won an Emmy for a voiceover on The Simpsons. Quote, "England is the only country in the world where the food is more dangerous than the sex." This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned now for Neil Conan and the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.